Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we welcome best-selling author Nancy Holder. She's going to talk about her book, Buffy, The Making of a Slayer. Welcome, Nancy.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
I'm fine. We met at a convention, so we're good friends. So I just want to let the audience know we actually know each other.
Yes, we certainly do.
Tell the audience a bit about yourself and your background.
Okay, well, I've been a freelance writer for decades now. I kind of don't want to say how long because then people think either I'm 85 or I started writing when I was two. And because I'm a professional liar, I can tell you both are true. I've written. I've been writing about Buffy since slightly before Buffy went on the air, so it's been about 17 years, and loving every single second. I've written a lot of young adult, dark fantasy, adult horror, romance novels, science fiction. I'm a New York Times bestselling author, and I've received 5 Bram Stoker Awards from the Horror Writers, of which I am a member, and an award for a book I wrote based on the TV show Saving Grace, another show I absolutely loved, a very Buffy-like show to me. So I just keep writing. I also teach in an MFA in creative writing program called Stone Coast, and it's through the University of Southern Maine. I live in San Diego, but I fly to Maine twice a year, and Maine is absolutely gorgeous, so there's my little promo for Maine.
Yeah, it's cold, though.
It's only cold where we are. We're in Freeport in Brunswick, and it's on the coast, and it's actually not as cold as this Southern Californian was anticipating. I thought I was going to die, but I've never died yet in Maine. And if you just go down 2 blocks to L.L. Bean, which is open 24/7, you can get everything you need.
It's so funny because, you know, Californians, we are notoriously thin-skinned. So whenever I've gone back east, it's like I'm in a parka and long johns and people are meeting me at the plane wearing shorts and a T-shirt.
That happens when I go to Maine. You can tell the Mainers at the baggage claim because they just have on, like, a jeans jacket. And I look like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. But I'm warm, so I'm happy.
That's all that counts. You are a big fantasy science fiction fan. What were your favorite shows growing up?
Oh, my gosh. Twilight Zone. And I used to – there was a show on – TV in San Diego on Saturday late mornings called Science Fiction Theater, and we had a local host like shows used to have, and one year it was Cosmosina and one year it was Mona Lisa, and she would introduce the scary movie of the day, and I would sneak in and watch them, and they would terrify me. I'd be scared all day, so you would think after this agony I would never do it again, but I would. So I watched Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, Night Gallery, so now you can probably age me a little. just about anything scary that was on, even if I wasn't allowed to see it, I'd figure out a way to go sneak it, watch it. Because back in those days, we did not, of course, have streaming shows that you could just download on a laptop. You had to plan my end run around my parents, scare myself to death, and stay up all night terrified. And I don't know why I would do this over and over, but I would.
I'm about the same generation as you. I remember, when there were 3 networks and there were 4 TV channels outside of the networks, including PBS. So
You had to really work hard to terrify yourself. I mean,
I used to watch Twilight Zone.
Well, one of the thrills of my entire writing career is a couple of years ago, I sold a short story to an anthology called More Tales from the Twilight Zone, and Rod Serling's widow actually read my story, and I was just like, this is what I did. I was so excited. I went to Disneyland. I went to the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, which is too scary for me to ride, but I bought one of the little pins that you can buy in the gift shop, and I wear it, and that's my little secret that I sold a Twilight Zone story.
That is so cool.
I was speechless. I was so excited.
Well, you know, I'm as much a Xena and Star Trek fan as you are a Buffy fan, because we discussed that at the panel that we met at. when you start working on your books for the Buffy books, I mean, I know you watched all the shows and you were a fan for the before for the movie and everything. How do you research each book and what makes each book different?
Okay. Well, as I have said before, and it sounds egotistical, but it's just a fact. I have written more tie-in material to Buffy than anybody else alive. And I started work on the first novel before the show went on with my co-author, Christopher Golden. We worked together on many, many Buffy projects. By the time we had a few books, a few novels under our belts, we were invited to write the episode guides, which are called the Watcher's Guides. We wrote two of the three, either with Chris or with Jeff Marriott and Mary Elizabeth Hart, who own Mysterious Galaxy Bookstores. And so I went on set, and I got to interview every single person there, with the exception, sadly, of Sarah Michelle Gellar. But I have talked to Joss a number of times and got to go just about wherever I wanted on set. I did that for Buffy, and I did that for Angel. So I've been on set. I've maintained relationships with some of the mostly writers, but I'm buds with Amber Benson. On Buffy, the Making of a Slayer, Jane Espenson was invaluable, and David Fury helped me. So I have, I still have contacts. So when it came time for Making of a Slayer, there were a lot of pieces already in place. The biggest challenge that my publisher, my original publisher, or let's see, the people who created the book is a company called Becker & Mayer. And we created this book for 47 North in America and Titan UK in the United Kingdom. And the hardest part was that people would say, oh, I think I have a picture of that, but it's in my garage somewhere. And so people had put away their Buffy memorabilia, and that because the book is very heavily illustrated. So it was somewhat of a challenge, but not an insurmountable challenge, to find images of things that I talked about in the text. So to do the Buffy, the Making of a Slayer, I already knew just many, many things, and I just continued to do more research. I rewatched the entire series and all the crossovers with Angel. What a chore.
Yeah, she suffered. Do you read fan fiction for Buffy?
I have not read fan fiction for Buffy because when we write novels based on the show, the attorneys ask us not to, because if our idea is dovetailed with a fan writer, we don't want to cause a potential legal liability for the show or for ourselves. So in that respect, I haven't really read much Buffy fanfic.
Are you aware of any of the authors?
Yeah. In fact, it's kind of ironic because I used to write fanfic for a show called Robin of Sherwood, and my editors and my publishers from those fanfic days and I have stayed in touch, and a lot of us are now have segued into being professional writers and in other capacities working for Buffy. So so I'm still with my friends, and I am very
say that again, because there's a lot of fan fiction writers listening out there. Say that again, that a lot of the people who write fan fiction become, it's a great training ground.
Yes, definitely. And I will say, since I teach in a Masters of Fine Arts program, right now, kind of one of the cool things, you know, because academics like to glom onto things, we're fans of things too. Fanfic studies is like a big thing right now, and fanfic writers are finally being given their due, and
yeah.
as I feel is overdue. So, yay, fanfic writers! I was a fanfic writer. I think a lot of the anxiety about fanfiction started up because when Buffy came on the air, that was when really the average person started getting on the internet. And because of the way copyright works in the United States, I think the shows were nervous about how to protect their trademarks and copyrights, not in a bad way because they had put up all the money to make these shows, but they didn't know how to make sure that whatever was written about Buffy was, and I think a lot of that is a little more relaxed. For example, I wrote a book for Teen Wolf, and Teen Wolf had a fanfic contest. And I know Dark Crystal had a contest. So it's more common now to look to the fanfic community not as a threat, but as like a part of the gang.
Yeah,
much more than when I first started.
The people who produce today are really aware. I mean, I know from Xena, I'm going to the conventions, they were extremely aware of the fan fiction. They used to do little nods to them and winks and stuff like that. And it was a real back and forth. In fact, one of the big fanfic writers became a writer for the show, Melissa Good. So there is a respect from people who love writing from the powers that be. I mean, it's a good thing.
Right. And I will say that while maybe not being sure what to do with fanfic, 20th Century Fox is the producer of Buffy. And I will say that fan service and waving to fans was a big part, I think, of the Buffy community because they would put up the stickers from different independent bands, surfboard guys, all over the lockers, flyers. If you look at the flyers, a lot of them are for real bands, and Joss and John King and the music department always tried to find small bands they could have play to help promote them. And then they would do little winks to the posting board, the Buffy posting board, or the Bronze, which was our posting board, just to say hi. And maybe they would say, look up on the whiteboard in the classroom at 2 minutes, 23 seconds in, and you'll see something for the posting board. And they would do things like that all the time. And it was a real sort of jolly, we're all in this together, family kind of atmosphere. It was very, very wonderful and exists to this day. Because as soon as I started working on Buffy, The Making of a Slayer, my old buds just rallied and started looking for images and contacting each other. And it was really, really fun. And I'm happy to say I'm working on another project for Becker and Mayer that will be published by Titan UK. And it's the same kind of situation. I had a couple of kind of grainy pictures of different vampires and demons that Becker and Mayer said, who are these specific entities? And I got two of my best friends who are fans, and we sat down and, okay, that's the vampire Buffy Stakes and Van Candy. And, I mean, it was, to us, fairly normal, but I think to the average viewer would seem very obscure. But we just sat down and we were like in heaven, wallowing like little pigs, happy to be looking at stuff connected to Buffy.
Cool.
Yeah.
Tell us about your new book and what you'd like the audience to take away from it.
Well, you mean the next Buffy project or?
The one that you're currently doing, the one that's Buffy, The Making of a Slayer.
The Making of a Slayer. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I segued into talking about the next one. For I'm a freelance writer,
that's
there's always
cool.
The next one. I just absolutely love this book. The way it happened was Becker and Mayer is a company in Seattle, Washington, and they put together books for other clients and sell them. Either a client looks to them or they look for a client. There was a Buffy fan there are lots of Buffy fans at Becker and Mayer, but they knew the 15th anniversary of the end of the show was coming up and started looking for a client so they could make a book. It's like, let's put on a show. Who will help pay for it? So Titan UK was very interested. And as we started working on the book for Titan, 47 North, which is Amazon, said, we want also to be in on this, but we want a fancy schmancy version. So The Making of a Slayer in the United States comes in a very beautiful leather-looking slipcase with gold embossed with a gold title. And then you open it up, the book that is the same book as in the UK is in the little clamshell case. And on the other side, there's a black packet of what we call removables, which are 13 paper objects, 11 or 12 of which were actually shown on screen. These are facsimiles. One of them is a page from a Watcher's Diary that was intended for on screen but never used. There's a joke in it that the writer who made it wrote, and I'm not telling the joke because you have to see what it is. And one of them is a facsimile of the object that Buffy gets from Robin Wood that he kept when his mother, the Slayer, died, that she uses to go back to see the Shadow Men. And so it's just really, really cool. And I just absolutely, sometimes I pick it up and go, wow, I was involved with this. I can't believe it. It's so awesome. So for a Buffy person, it's just, it was kind of like a little crown. It's like having a crown. I wrote the text, and I watched all the episodes, as I say, and I listened to all the commentaries. I went online to get more interviews. I talked to Jane about a couple things and just got it put together. And Amber Benson wrote the foreword, God bless her. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful book. The nice thing is in the United States, since it's 47 North, i.e. Amazon, it's constantly discounted. If you look on Amazon to buy it, it only costs like $30, which is amazing. So make a great present. And I just love it. Yeah.
That's
it's
cool.
It's really, really a beautiful book. Yeah.
And so there's a lot of special little things for fans inside the book,
mm-hmm.
like including memorabilia.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah, and
cool.
In fact, when I'm some like I was at the Tucson Festival of Books last weekend. You and I will be at Condor together this coming weekend in San Diego. And when I bring this book and I open up the removables, all I have to do is pull out a page and show it to a fan. They go, oh, aha, because they always know what it is. There's always in any of these removables, if I show them to a Buffy person, they immediately know what it is, except for the page from The Watcher's Diary with the joke, because that was never shown on screen.
Well, it's hard to know what it is if they've never seen it.
Yeah. But all I say is this is a page from A Watcher's Diary, and they go, oh, cool. And they know what that is. So, yeah. And interestingly enough, there's a big map of Sunnydale in the book, and I had not seen this map before. I thought I'd seen everything when I was doing the Watcher's Guides. And it's actually a reworked map of San Diego. So right on, guys.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah, you can still see parts of San Diego. You can see Balboa Park. You can see... And they just reworked parts that would show. And it'll have Buffy, it'll have Sunnydale names, but later on you kind of bleed over and it's San Diego for sure. Although I'm not saying that San Diego was the model for Sunnydale. That's not true.
Let us hope not.
Yeah.
We really don't want demons and stuff like that.
No, not in our zoo. We got lots of hyenas.
Yeah, we got a lot of cool stuff, but no demons. Can you tell us about the new thing you're working on? You gave a little hint about it, but can you talk about that now?
I can't talk about it too much. I'm absolutely jazzed that Titan UK came back to us and said yes, because we went to Titan UK with another idea. And my original editor for it, Shirsty, moved on, and I was very, very sad. But now Dana and I are just like, we did the dance of joy like Numfar when they approved it. So I can't really say too much. It's in production right now. I'm sad to say it will come out until 2015. But since we're in March of 2014, that's understandable because these are very, very beautifully lavish illustrated books. And to get the images and all of that put together is a job of work. But I will also say the foreword is being written by the most appropriate person. It's not Joss, but it's the most appropriate person for this book. So when the title starts hitting the stands, knock wood, unless something happens, it'll really be cool, very cool.
That is so cool. I have a question that I ask a lot of people because I have to deal with it myself. When you are working on your writing, how do you balance your work life and your family life and your friends? What is your secret?
It is hard. It's so hard. Right now, I kind of have a built-in sort of safety because my daughter goes to school so far away from our house that after I drive her to school, I don't go back home. So I work in, like, Starbucks and Panera. I work inside my car, and then I go to the library. And when it's time to pick her up, we go home. This saves me from just saying, oh, sure, I can go out to lunch. Or, yeah, I can go to the airport for you. So I can't. I'm not around. So that saves me friend-wise, although that makes me sad to be saved friend-wise. And with my daughter, I just really, really try hard, especially because she's second semester junior now, to pick her up. We go to the store, we make dinner, we do whatever, we watch TV together, maybe an episode of something. So I try really hard to make that her time. And if I'm on deadline, I just go back to work. And it's tiring, but it's what you do when you're a freelancer. She's dating, so, you know, it's not like she's, mommy, what are we going to do this weekend together? So I have more freedom than I used to. And When it's vacation time, I get a lot of eye rolling because I'm usually having to work part-time on vacation. I try to just decrease how much I have to do per day, but I usually still have to work.
Yeah, I know. I have some issues like that myself. I don't have a daughter, but I have family, and I'll be, like, busy. It'd be like a weekend. Even my birthday, I did stuff. Even when I was at the Zena convention, I was doing stuff. I always am.
Yeah, I think that's
can't
just
stop
the,
when you're a writer.
The way it is, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm always curious if there's like a secret. There's thing that I'm missing.
Just trying not to accrue too much resentment. And I used to have people say to me, I'd say, I'm sorry, I can't do that, I'm on deadline. And finally somebody said, you're always on a deadline. So now if I really have to protect myself, and now I'm telling everybody this, I lie. I say, this is due at 2 o'clock today, which would be 5 in New York. And they'll go, oh, I'm sorry, I won't bother you then. And it's not really due at 2 o'clock today, but in a way it is, because if I don't get some X done by 2 o'clock today, I'll have twice.
You'll never get it done.
Exactly. So now everybody knows I lie about it. Great.
Now they know your secret. Uh-oh. this is sort of a silly question, but I'm curious about it. I know you're a fan of a lot of different types of shows, and because you're so busy, do you still, you know, read other books? Do you still watch? I do. I just was curious if you do. Do you watch other shows? Are you hooked into anything in particular right now?
Yes. We always faithfully watch The Amazing Race. We faithfully watch Castle. I can't imagine why. We always watch Elementary when the Sherlocks are on. Yeah, we always watch Sherlock.
I love Elementary.
Oh, I do too. I love that whole thing. I'm a Sherlockian. I absolutely love Sherlock Holmes. I've written a number of pastiches. So, I've been to the Baker Street Irregulars dinner, which was the thrill of a lifetime. I can't even tell you how awesome it was. These is the old venerated group of people who really know Sherlock Holmes. I mean, they know the whole canon and are very well-spoken judges, actors. It's like the secret society of Sherlock Holmes. Reading-wise, yes, I actually just finished being on the jury for the novel award for the Bram Stoker Awards from the Horror Writers. And, I can't even tell you some of the awesome, awesome books we read. One book I'd like to shout out, it didn't make the ballot. I loved it. It's called Evil and the Mask by Harukami, Japanese translated book. Very cool. Very weird book.
Well, that's always interesting.
Yeah.
I was you made me remember. One of the biggest thrills I had when I went to England was to go to 21B Baker Street. I mean,
yeah.
It has a museum and stuff.
An irregular from England took me on a walk. Another irregular had done had done research on from the empty house, and we walked through that part of London, and based on their research, he said, okay, right here is where 221B Baker Street would be, and it was very, very awesome. And then we had to eat at Speedy's, of course. And then at Speedy's, of course, the door next door is their door, quote unquote. And it was covered with fan letters. And I wrote a fan letter, too. I wrote NH plus BC. So I'm sure Benedict Cumberbatch is going to call me any second. But it was really cute because there were notes like, we love you from Seven Silly French Girls. And they put all their names.
Oh, I love that.
It was really, really fun. And a big thrill. Yay. And so thank you to the Roger Johnson was the Baker Street regular in London who walked me around. And thanks to him and his wife for being so gracious. I cried half the way of it. So I was so excited.
That's one thing I love about London is that you can, unlike most cities, you can walk around and you can still see where everything was. And they don't knock things down. It's just, I love that.
Yeah, well. And since we're Californians, out here it's either a theme park or a recreation, yeah, or it's a ride. So it's like it
or
really is the
down.
real thing. Yeah, yeah. So I was blown away. We got walked past where Arthur Conan Doyle had lived, really did live there, and that made me cry. And my daughter kept mm-hmm. giggling. She used to roll her eyes at me at all this, but now she just thinks it's kind of endearing when I just start weeping at how cool this is, and this really was where he lived, and you know, just really awesome.
Yeah,
but
I'm the same way. I'm the same way. I am the same way. We don't have a lot of time. I know you're going to be a Condor on Sunday. Can you talk about that and any other events that you have coming up so anybody can come and say hi?
Sure. I'm going to be at the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books. I'm going to be working in the Horror Writers booth on Saturday and Sunday from 2 to 3. Then at 3, I am on a panel that Leslie Klinger will be moderating. It's called Dark Fantasy. And Condor, I'm going to be there almost all day Sunday. And my big thrill of that day will be I'll be on a panel with Peter Beagle, Jonathan Mayberry, Greg Van Eekhout. It will be moderated by, I'm looking at his name in my head, Henry Hertz. And it's going to be like the highlight to me of Condor, plus seeing you, of course, Sherry. Condor will be at the Town and Country Hotel starting on Friday night of this coming week in San Diego.
And I'll be there the whole weekend.
That is so long.
But what's the name of the panel that you were just talking about? Do you remember what it was about?
Yes, it's about writing a young adult, and I probably can find it for you. You know what? Henry's been tweeting about it. If you're a tweet person, let's see. You'd think I'd know this off the top of my head, but today it's all about chatting with Sherry. So,
yay!
You know what? If people want to find out, they can either go to my website, www.nancyholder.com, or find me on Twitter, @NancyHolder, or they can go on Facebook, and I'm on Facebook, and I'll be sure to let everybody know.
I have the thing for all the panels, so I'll also put it on my blog on Thursday. Usually I do it on Friday, but I'm going to be at Condor on Friday, so my blog will go up on Thursday this week.
Okay. It's been called various things. Greg keeps calling it the Kidlit panel.
The Kidlit? I like that.
Yeah, Kidlit. it's about young adult. I'm laughing. I'm actually on my computer looking for you now while I'm talking to you, see if I can pull it up before we have to go. So I'll keep looking, and if I see it, I'll go like, yes! I'll look up Henry.
That's funny, because I might sit in on it, because I'm actually writing a young woman's book. So I may have someone babysit my table and come and sit in on it.
Awesome. Let's see what Henry... one thing I would like to say is, could you Google stop making everything so fancy? And I don't know why I have Google circles and Google Plus and what all is all this stuff. Let's see. Now, I still haven't found it from Henry. I know it's in here. Here we go.
I would do it, but it's in a folder across the room, so I can't get
That's
it
all
right now.
Okay, I can say that it's from 12 to 1 on Sunday, March 23rd, in the Garden Salon 1.
Cool.
Yeah.
And everybody should go, because Nancy's really fun, as you can tell.
Oh, thank you. But it's very exciting, because Peter Beagle is on it, and Jonathan Mayberry, who's a humongous, here it is. I'm lying to you. Anyway, Jonathan Mayberry is a big New York Times bestselling author now, and he just moved to Del Mar from Philadelphia, Philly, as he says. So I have no idea. I think it might have something to do with the weather, why he made that move, but I'm not sure. So anyway, from 12 to 1 on Sunday.
Cool. Okay, and I will blog it too. Come to the end. I want my live audience to thank you. Thank you so much, Nancy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sherry. As always, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I mean, you're such a lot of fun. I'm really excited.
okay.
I just want my thank you. I want my audience to know next week we're going to have Joss Ward, and she's going to talk about her book Bits and Pieces, Tales and Sonnets. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you so much, Sherry. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye, and thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Thank you.